It's Tuesday, July 31st, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey everyone, it's really late here in Honolulu, but I got a great show lined up for you. Lots of content to cover. Thanks for being part of the Ohana here. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. I want to welcome you all to the show tonight. I hope everyone's having a great start to their week. I tell you what, it is really, really late here. The reason for getting started late is about 8 o'clock tonight when I'd gotten the kids all down for bed. And school's back in here, by the way. The Hawaii schools start early, so this was their first day back. And so we had them good in bed early to get a good night's sleep. And Ding Dong was at the door. Someone was at the door, went to the door. It was a good friend of ours. And we didn't even know she was in Hawaii at the time. And she'd came in and had some major life changes. So we've been sitting around here catching up with her over the last couple of hours. And matter of fact, my wife and her are still downstairs chatting. I think it's going to be one of those discussions where the ladies are going to be up into the wee hours of the night. So I very nicely excused myself and I snuck up here and of course launched the show out. But hey, how are you? I tell you, I want to welcome all of you that are to the show for the very first time, checking out the show for the very first time. And of course, all of the Ohana here that are long-term subscribers, I want to thank you all for being subscribed, staying subscribed. And for those of you that are just checking out the show for the first time, you better subscribe. And hey, while you're at it, get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. And of course, check out all of the old archive podcasts via the podcast link. And sign up for our newsletter via the newsletter link on the website. That'll get you the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. Well, I got a great list of stuff for you tonight. I found some good content. We'll get into that here in a little bit. But I thought I'd catch you up on what went down this weekend. And I've gotten a whole bunch of instant messages from people and saying, hey, did you finish all that schoolwork? The schoolwork got in just in time. I definitely pushed it to the last hour trying to get all the data together. And, well, we'll see what the grade is when it comes back. I bet I got my fingers crossed. Did some house hunting this weekend as well. Boy, I tell you, I'm at a point where I can make a decision. I've got about three properties that I say, let's go for. But my wife is still heeing hawing, and she's trying to figure out, well, you know, it's, you know, every time I have picked a place to live. Now, fellas, if you're not married yet, here's some advice. Don't pick if you're living in a bachelor's pad now and you're getting ready to get married, definitely think about moving to somewhere else. Because when we first got married, the place I was living in was definitely a bachelor's pad, and it wasn't conducive for married life. It was more conducive for party life. And she's always blamed me all these years on the different places I picked. So I finally have said in this go around, I said, honey, it's your choice. You pick it, you'll be happy. But we're at that point where I'm kind of like giving a kind of gentle nudge. Is this one? And I think at some point here, I'm going to kind of have to say, okay, pick from the three or four or five and see if I can get her to move. But I don't want her from a year from now saying, see, we picked the wrong house, or you picked the wrong house. I don't want that to happen. We got some time, so I'm not stressing it. Plus, the market here in Hawaii is cooling off a little bit, just a little bit. So I think that's been good that we've been patient up to this point. Well, what else is happening in the tech/podcasting space? The Podcast Awards voting is going on, of course, and oh my goodness, I I called the folks over at GoDaddy tonight, and I said, throw some ice cubes on top of that thing because it is definitely smoking. The traffic has been through the roof. Matter of fact, it was the voting was so high today that we exceeded what we're allowed to have for mail relays. And the way they set up their servers at GoDaddy is you don't actually send the mail from your particular server. It goes to a GoDaddy primary server, and basically what they're trying to do is prevent people from doing setting up servers and sending up spam lists. So I called them and said, hey, I need the number of validations per day raised to 35,000. And the guy on the end of the phone was like, 35,000? Why would you need 35,000 emails a day unless you're sending spam? And I went through the full explanation of that and telling them what was going on. So hopefully, they said they were going to program it in tonight to up the number, but wow, it was traffic on that has been through the roof. It's been simply amazing. I could only dream of having that type of daily traffic at Geek News Central. It's amazing to watch. You know, I think at peak today we had 15,000 hits in an hour. Now, not everyone's coming to visit. Vote. Some people are just coming in to look, but it's just it's wow. It's incredible. It really, really is. So what else? Hey, on Saturday morning, we had our Tech Podcast Roundtable. That went really well. And Annie McCaskey did a presentation. Let's see here. One of the hosts from Computer America gave a presentation. Mark from Riz Worlds gave a presentation. Then I did my State of Podcasting at the end. It was an hour and 25 minutes. We had a full house. We had a huge number of people in on the GoToMeeting session. We had a large number of people come in via TalkShoe. I was actually streaming the show live via Ustream at the same time I was doing a screen capture. It was really, really cool. I had all forms of outbound internet capability here just maxed out. I had the Clearwire pushing the Ustream stream. I had the Sprint eVideo watching the TalkShoe chat. And then I had two other computers doing the... one was actually mission control for the presentations, and then the other was serving as recording. And I don't need all of that, but in order to get everything captured that we need for the production and make it easy for me at the end, it's just an amazing, amazing thing that it's an amazing way I put it together to make it happen. And Max, you get a lot of people in, and that's what's the fun part is being able to distribute these live events via multiple different streams. You actually do a live stream, you do a GoToMeeting meeting session, you do a and then you have it being recorded. It just all comes together. It was a beautiful thing. And the coolest thing was is I had four people in all parts of the country that had different types of presentations. We had video, we had product demos, we had had PowerPoint presentations, we had you know, even there was a Word document up for a little bit. So it just goes to show you the variety of things that we could do within GoToMeeting. Pretty powerful application, being able to share whatever you want, whenever you want. And so when you get a chance, if you want a free 30-day trial, you can check that out at GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast, and you can get a free 30-day trial on that over there. Okay, what else have I got going here? And there was, and one thing I wanted to talk about real quick is Rob Cifuto. He's my marketing director over at Raw Voice. We've been working on a lot of stuff with Blueberry, as many of you well know, and I'm working on a lot of back-end stuff for our generator. Matter of fact, our stats engine, we thought we had a little bug. It turned out that it wasn't. It turned out to be something else, and we were able to, we've got that very, very, very close to cutting loose to a big group of testers initially. So he put up a state of Blueberry, essentially. He kind of went through everything that's going on right now with Blueberry and all the stuff we've got planned. And you can find that over at blog.blueberry.com. Now, I want to take a few moments here, of course, and thank GoDaddy for being the sponsor here. And I just want to ask you this. Do you have security issues? If you do, you need an SSL certificate from GoDaddy. GoDaddy SSL certificates protects information flowing to and from your site with up to 256-bit encryption. A padlock icon appears in users' browser bars telling them their sensitive information is safe with you. GoDaddy SSL certificates provide 99.9% browser recognition. They're issued in minutes. Get a GoDaddy Turbo SSL for just $14.99 by entering the code GNCSSL. That's GNCSSL. When you check out, some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Of course, when you're getting domain names, use the promo code TODD. If you're doing orders of $15 or more, use Geek5. Pod58 works for hosting accounts as well. But, you know, we've set up SSL certificates on all our servers. And what's nice about that is, you know, I really was kind of like, this kind of intimidates me a little bit. But it made it so that we were able to have our own certificates with our own everything registered to us so that people wouldn't get a strange pop-up saying, do you want to validate this certificate when it doesn't, you know, necessarily belong to if someone's using someone else's certificate. So it works really good. You geeks out there, this is a great price for a SSL certificate. Thanks for GoDaddy for being a sponsor here at the Geek News Central podcast. Okay, got a little bit of a sore throat going on. I don't know what it is. It's low level. I think we went to the fair Saturday night, took the kids to the fair, and I think because it was so dusty, it was hot, dusty, and I don't know what it was. Got something in my throat. And, you know, here in Hawaii, they have several fairs, and this was the Hawaii Farm Fair. And being I grew up in the country and grew up as a farm boy. Yes, some of you may not have known that, but I did. cash crop, livestock. My dad was a general contractor. My grandfather had the farm. So I got a good taste of, what it was to run bulldozers, backhoes, and cranes while at the same time sitting on a tractor and planting in the spring and harvesting in the fall and and raising livestock. So, you know, I had to take him down there. And my littlest one, you know, he hasn't had too much experience around true farm animals. And their display down there, I think they had like 8 or 9 steers. They may have had 20 hogs, maybe a dozen lambs, a couple of breeding ewes, and what else did they have? They had some baby chicks that were hatching. That was cool. So we had fun down at the fair, and my kids actually enjoyed being in the farm section more than they wanted to go to the rides. And I was a happy camper that they wanted to spend most of the time there, and was able to impair some of my previous knowledge of being a country boy. But that is long since gone. 24 years since I've been actually have done any farming whatsoever. So it's been a long, long time. But anyway, let's get into the techie stuff. That's what you guys came for, right? Okay, the FCC is to rule on the wireless auction. The Federal Communication Commission will set rules tomorrow, or actually today, governing the auction of $15 billion of public airways. And this is the decision we've been waiting for. We'll see what happens here. We'll see how much AT&T got their way. We'll see if Verizon was able to bulldog the FCC at all. I think ultimately Google will probably end up bidding on the spectrum. But let's just hope that the FCC holds by their word and make sure that the rules for the auction force these companies to open this up. You know, I'm sure this is going to get skewed. We've talked about this before, and I definitely want you all. I'm going to be looking for the announcement. So please, all of us, keep our eyes peeled to Geek News Central tomorrow, because I'll be weighing in on their decision. And what we need to do is, if it doesn't come through the way we think it should, we need to get ready to really do a battle cry here and, put the FCC on notice. If they, you know, go against the general wisdom of what's been suggested so far. So only time will tell on this one here. And Google, Google's being accused of not playing nice. They've said that the other companies out there said, well, you've stepped on our toes, and now we're going to punish you. So, you know, big companies like AT&T, Verizon, you know, this is their livelihood, and they're not too keen on Google coming in and trying to bully their way in. You know, AT&T's got enough money. If they wanted to buy this whole spectrum to themselves, they probably could. And then not do anything with it and just laugh. We'll see. You know, that's not going to happen. But let's hope that Google's efforts here have had some persuasion with the Federal Communications Commission. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. All right, Asa Dulzer is reporting on it, and there's been a lot of speculation since the announcement made last week that with the Thunderbird going to be spun off into its development, going to be spun off to a different group. Actually, what it means is that Thunderbird is going to be having a couple of full-time developers working on it and have a little more dedicated staffing in the future. He wanted to basically say on his blog here that Thunderbird is not going away. And they're planning on improving it at a faster pace and not to worry that Thunderbird's going to continue to be supported and it's going to continue to grow. How many of you are using Thunderbird versus Outlook or a different application? I'm kind of curious what your experience is with it. I don't use it personally. I'm an Outlook user, although I've been having some problems with Outlook lately. I got to go in and make sure I'm not filling up the PST file too much, getting the database too full. But definitely like to hear your feedback on Thunderbird. And of course, you can do that via the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Okay, I'm not going to spend very much time on this next article, but it's one that's been posted by Mark Cuban. And he's got a little bit of a write-up on a company called Stores Online. I think they're at storesonline.com or maybe it's storesonlinepro.com. Any of you got any experience with this company? Have you got any friends that have been involved with setting up a store through this group? If you have, I guess the only thing I'm going to say is go over and take a look at what Mark has to say about this company. And while I really can't comment on it because I don't have any knowledge beyond what Mark is saying here, it is curious that from time to time he'll put something on his website that is so different from everything else he posts. It makes me wonder what the agenda is. I don't necessarily think the agenda he has here is a positive one. But if you have any experience with Stores Online, I'd love to hear your feedback on that as well. Okay, moving on. Hey, Doug Kay announced today that IT Conversation is going to be rejoining the Conversation Network. And he says on his blog here, the short version, he says, Michael Gohagan and I have decided to move IT Conversations, the longest running podcasting channel, from Gigavox Media to the Conversation Network. Now, this is what I'm kind of surprised about. He says, a year ago, we moved IT Conversation to Gigavox as a for-profit venture. But since then, Gigavox mission has moved away from the podcasting content business. And to be brutally honest, we weren't really giving IT Conversations the attention it deserved. And there's the confusion that IT Conversation wasn't part of the Conversations Network. Hey, it was confusing for us, too. He says, for all those reasons, they've decided to move IT Conversations back to the nonprofit Conversation Network. So what does that mean? But the thing I think was surprising here is that he said that Gigavox mission has moved away from the podcasting content business. I'm like, huh? They've built Gigavox as a podcasting management system. So I'm a little confused on what they're doing there, but time will tell. But they're making some changes over there at the Conversations Network, and I respect Doug and the things they're doing over there, and of course Michael I know very well, as long with some of their executive producers over there, Paul Figiani, who listens to this show, who is the author that pens podcastrigs.com. He's got a website as well. I'll try to put that up in the show notes tonight. But, you know, one thing, and this isn't necessarily related to what they're doing over there at Gigavox and at the Conversations Network, but over the past 4 or 5 days, boy, the folks at podtech.net, John Furrier and company, they've just been getting brutalized by people out in the press and essentially people questioning the viability of Podtech. And, there's a lot of, I got to give Podtech credit. You know, they've got some great people over there. They're doing some great content. You look at what some of the stuff Robert Scoble's done and doing a lot of video and interviews with up-and-coming companies, and now that stuff's been good. But I was pretty shocked when John had announced last week that they spent $500 million on video production for one show. That shocked me to my core. It really did, to think that that much would have been spent on production on one show. But it looks like they're getting ready to go for some more funding, or have gotten some more funding over there, and they're kind of changing their model. And I guess how that relates to their model change is that from the very beginning, you know, some part of the model that I work under with Raw Voice and what we do is that we aggregate content. You know, we go out and podcasters become part of our community. And part of that service of being part of the community, we essentially become almost like a broker for them. We go out and negotiate deals on their behalf and present that to them. And if they decide they want to be involved in that, then they can opt in or opt out. And with, you know, no long-lasting contracts or nothing like that. We don't own anybody's content or make them sign ridiculous, exclusive contracts. But they're going to go out and now recruit content, I guess, and build, it looks to me, like an aggregated community. So I'm thinking, that's my model. And I'm doing that with no funding. And look what they're going to go out. And so it is kind of curious what they're doing. I guess they got like 40 people working for them. And I don't know what I'd do with a staff that big. I really don't. We get a heck of a lot of work done, or maybe we'd be chasing each other around, chasing our tails a little bit. But John, I wish you luck over there, and I know that they're wanting you to focus on the content side, and you're looking for a CEO. Good luck on that, and good luck with the being able to find content and monetize it. It's a tough gig, it really is, and I'm glad we don't have the pressure of having to essentially meet all kinds of performance marks. It's better to be able to look at things in a long haul situation than have to know that you're going to be out of money in a year and be either on the street with no company or looking for your next big thing. Okay, so anyway, good luck to them over there, and yeah, I'm sure they're going to figure it out. There's a bunch of smart people that are working over there, and I have no doubt that they'll move forward. Okay, over on MSNBC, and this is kind of a weird one, and I don't know why they've actually got this up here, but there was a picture of a moon taken back in 1953 that basically there was an optical flash that was seen within the picture, and this is thought to have been maybe caused by some sort of a gassy material leaking out of the moon. Now, I'm thinking to myself, all right, 1953, standard picture, and there, why just wasn't this, some sort of reflection? How could this have been why do they think this was a gassy eruption? I don't know. I guess I don't understand it. Those of you that are space and science geeks, hey, I'd love to hear what your thought is on this, because this really, it looks like an artifact on a picture. It doesn't look like a some sort of gas release on the moon. But, who knows? Link will be up in the show notes. All right, the RIAA has kind of, they got in a little bit of trouble. They've gotten under the gun by a U.S. Army sergeant who's been accused by the RIAA of having 367 sound recordings that he attained via accused of, anyway, of getting those via of illegal file sharing. But in the submission to the court that the RIAA, they also had a listing of over 4,200 other files, which included images and video files of different types. And they had it all listed, and this, I guess there's a little bit of a fight going on, okay, why, did they try to prejudice the client by, showing what type of files this guy had on his computer in addition to the media files But this could be another instance where the RIAA could be accused of some sort of malicious prosecution against this individual. Again, while I don't condone file sharing, it does seem to be pretty dirty play that the RIAA would list the other files that this gentleman had on his computer, and it considers an invasion of privacy. And I, you know, think about that. You know, if you are sharing files and you get a notice by the RIAA that you're going to be taken to court, or pay, or you're going to be taken to court, and you end up in court, and then they list other files that are in your computer beyond what they're accusing you of sharing, I think you'd be pretty upset as well. So, you know, how long is the court system going to before they punish the RIAA for doing this? You know, why are they, how can they just get away with this? This is so over the top legal wise. I really discredit this guy's, you know, his character through the additional data that they've provided here. It's a scary trend. It really, really is. So I'll have the link up to this in the show notes. All right, over on torrentfreak.com, something that's not surprising is that file sharing in foreign countries are much, much higher than it is here in the United States. And that is not necessarily the non-exception for the UK as well, because they're reporting here that that the Brits are downloading more free music than ever, from ever before, and are less concerned about getting caught than they were last year. And the primary reason that they're downloading more is, they're saying, because it's free. So it just goes to show you that, the file sharing, no matter where you're at, whether you're in a country that has copyright laws or not, people are still doing it, and the primary driving factor is it's free. Now, I don't know if there's any prosecution that's going on in the UK. Can anybody, you know, just essentially drop me a note, one of the listeners over there, and let me know if there's been any peer-to-peer prosecutions going on? What I find surprising in this, though, is it says of all men that were asked in the survey, 47% of them admitted to unauthorized downloading, up from 43% in 2006. And from women, 40% admitted doing the same, up from just 29% in 2006. And they're saying they're going to continue to do this. They're not, they're really not worried, and they're going to continue to download media. So there's a good report. It was, the report was actually put up on Entertainment, come on back here. Entertainment Media Research.com. It's a PDF file. That link is available via the bottom of the file if you want to take a full look at this in the survey results. Okay, my grandfather is 97 going, I guess, or is he 98 now? 97, 98, one of the two. And he's been wearing a hearing aid for a while, and he has a little bit of trouble changing the small batteries out, as you would expect. A lot of old people have that problem as well. But apparently a woman who was 108, she needed to have her, she wanted to get a hearing aid for the first time, or she's getting a new hearing aid. And the company reported, says that because she's has failing eyesight, and she uses a wheelchair, and she finds it difficult to hear different types of stuff. It's really her only outlet now, is to be able to hear audio programming. And the company told her that she has to wait at least 18 months before she receives a new hearing aid. What is up with that? And she's complaining, basically saying, hey, I might be dead before I get my hearing aid. And, you know, her quality of life is going to be impacted considerably if she doesn't get the hearing aid. So, why is it taking this lady 18? This is just shocking to me that it would take, are hearing aids in that short a supply? Do any of you, are any of you wearing a hearing aid right now? And apparently she is a, where is she at? This is out of The Guardian, so this is UK news. So, you know, I have not heard of anybody waiting that long for a hearing aid here in the United States. So I'm just surprised. What is the deal? Why is the length so long? And, you know, my goodness, we can get an iPod by and out of a vending machine today. And this lady has to wait 18 months for a hearing aid. Something's really wrong with the system. It really, really is. So our family's pretty shocked and upset as well. So we'll see if this press gets her any relief. And if we do, I'll see if I can follow up on this here in a couple of weeks, see if she got her hearing aid. A little bit of science news. Actually, this is science/physical news. It's being reported that there's been a breakthrough in research done for multiple sclerosis. And I'm sure many of you know of someone, have a family member maybe, or someone that, a friend of a friend that has MS. There's a lot of, MS strikes a lot of people. It really does. There's there's around 350,000 people alone in the United States that have MS. So, and that's, U.S. figures alone. But there's been some breakthrough in the MS study. Investigators reported the biggest breakthrough in decades into the genetic drivers for multiple sclerosis, identifying two genes that each boost the risk of developing this tragic disease by up to 30%. And while I read through this tonight, and I thought, wow, this is just great medicine. And, the people that, the researchers that have been studying this for so long, it's a well-deserved breakthrough. And obviously they're looking for a way to, maybe delay the onset or, completely cure this horrific disease. But they said, and, I've always thought that the human gnome, is it genome or gnome? Probably going to get smacked up here by all of you. But the human genome mapping that was done led to this discovery here. So it just goes to show you that that work that was done there is starting to pay dividends in big ways. We can only hope that this leads to some sort of treatment in the future, and maybe give some pointers towards some other things that are possibly causing multiple sclerosis and some of these other horrific diseases out there. This next article is one that I'm sure none of us will ever really want to see ourselves, but the folks in Croatia in the early evening hours a couple of nights ago had a heck of a show. Apparently a magnitude, and I guess this is how they rank meteorites, but a magnitude 20 meteorite skimmed the atmosphere. And it basically passed in and passed back out and kept on going. So I guess we had a pretty close call on a pretty big meteorite that could have had a significant impact. But it was caught on camera. So a pretty awesome shot. And this thing looks huge. I'm sure it's not very big. I wonder how big a meteorite has to be classified as a magnitude 20. Maybe I can do some, I should have done some Googling on this to find out before, and probably it turns out, probably it's about the size of a baseball or something, but I'll have the link to it in the picture in the show notes. Boy, every once in a while I get an email from someone saying, oh, Todd, you made a horrendous grammatical error on your website, and okay, it happens, and I'm when I was writing my book, I had a copy editor, so, she was my hero during my book writing process. And so tonight I thought it was very, very appropriate here that I would put up a link to 150 resources to help you write better, faster, and more persuasively. So for all of you out there that have problems with your grammar from time to time, besides listening to Grammar Girl, you can definitely find some good links to some good online resources via the online education database. And I'll put this link up in the show notes for you all to review. When I'm always telling stories, I always like to use a good analogy. I always like to, use a reference of something. Try to break it down. I talk about tech, breaking tech down for the common man. So I found this article on Information Week today that is just the absolute perfect analogy of the AT&T system, the AT&T issue that's facing all of us right now, especially with mobile devices. The title of the article is, If AT&T Run the Highway System. So, starts out, and this is a post by Thomas Claiborne. He says, if AT&T ran the highway system, things would be different. Only AT&T-approved cars would be allowed on the roads, all of which would be toll roads. Drivers would have to prepare the tolls based on the estimated number of miles they expected to drive. Those who drove fewer miles than the estimated would get no refund. Those who drove more would be charged for the overage at a higher rate. The AT&T-approved iCar would be limited to a top speed of 30 miles per hour. Salespeople in AT&T car showrooms would have no idea how the iCar operated because of the iCar would be required to use it for a period of 2 years to pay or pay a penalty. In addition to purchase the price of the iCar, buyers would have to pay a one-time activation fee to get the engine to start, not to mention the taxes. Well, this just goes on and on and on. And this is so funny. This is so true. This is a perfect analogy to AT&T. Share this widely. This guy did a great job on this article. This is the article of the day for sure for the show. Made me get a big smile when I read it. You know, there's just some great one-liners here. You know, here's one that I've always had a beef with. You know that the phone companies, all of them, have gotten, you know, you read through your phone bill and you look at the taxes you get charged on different things, the surcharges. You know, there was some surcharges that the AT&T was allowed to charge that the government stopped making the phone companies charge for. And they kept charging anywhere. They renamed it to something else. And here's the analogy that fits that. Many of AT&T's roads would be made of dirt, despite tax credits AT&T received to pave its roads. So he's hit all the crucial points here, and there's many, many more little one-liners like that, and I think you'll all have fun with it. All right, I think I got into this a little bit on the last show. May have run a little bit out of time on this, but the courts have ruled that companies just like Raw Voice and any company has an online source cannot change the terms of service of a service without notification of those that are using it. What's happened in the past is companies have said, we reserve the right to change the terms of service at any time. Courts have ruled that, no, you cannot do this. If you are going to change the terms of service of your site, you must notify every one of those people that are on your site that agree to the old terms of service. So companies beware out there. This could affect you. And there's now case law to support this. So make sure you have some sort of a notification re-opt-in system so that you know, people are made aware when you make a terms of service change that they have to re-agree to the terms of service. Or if you charge them or if you do something that they weren't expecting and you've changed the terms of service, you could be hauled into the court like this case was, and it probably is not going to turn out positively for you. So the courts have ruled on this. I actually think it was already appealed, so it was at the Ninth Circuit already. So we'll see if this goes any higher than this, but courts ruled on this. Okay, check this out here. Yahoo, AOL, plan to charge users for sending direct emails. Pretty bold statement, isn't it? This comes from a website that I've never seen before. It's called flyinghamster.com. By the sheer name of it, I'm thinking, is this a parody site? Is this something that is a joke? Well, as I read into this a little further, it says a new digital divide is set to separate the haves from the have-nots, with two internet giants endorsing a system that gives preferential treatment to emails sent by paying subscribers. America Online and Yahoo, two of the world's largest providers of email accounts, plan to start charging an optional fee to send email directly into the inboxes without going through junk mail filters, a media report said here. Well, hold on a second. Most of us probably want our email going through a junk mail filter. But what they're saying here is that they are going to now, if you want to guarantee that your file is going to get, or your email is going to be delivered, you'll have to pay a fee to make that happen. No, I'm not paying no fees to make sure my email gets delivered. Sorry. I'm Yahoo, AOL. I will not do business with companies that do this. This is, you know, that is just trying to squeak a little more cash out of everyone's pockets. Right, those of you that are really worried about booby traps within web pages, I've got a ZDNet UK article here that was written by Joris Evers that goes into an interview that he conducted that talks about web-based security issues, and it's a good one that you could run through. All right, the next article up should give all of you something to really think about. How many of you do a lot of text messaging with your phone? Well, did you know that you're paying anywhere from $150 to $1,000 per megabyte of message data for your SMS on your phone? Let me say that again. Did you know that you're paying anywhere from $150 to $1,000 per megabyte of message data for your SMS on your phone? Yes, that's how much it's costing you in the extra charges that you're paying for. You know, these plans that allow you unlimited messaging or 500 messages, so forth. You know, it takes a lot of text to make up a single meg. But let me give you an example in comparison to the web world, you know, that I'm dealing with right now. If my good friends at GoDaddy over there, my dedicated server, just recently I had to up the bandwidth on the box because I didn't have enough. We were running out of bandwidth on a monthly basis. So I took it from the level it was at, and I increased it by 500 gigs. Now, 500 gigs equals 512,000 megabytes, okay? So 512,000 megabytes extra per month, or 500 gigs, cost me a whopping $19.95. So, you know, if you're paying $150 to $1,000 per meg on doing SMS traffic on your cell phone. Think of the money. This isn't a lot of bandwidth that's costing the phone companies. You know, they're getting over big time on this. I mean, this is such a cash cow for the mobile companies. It is such a ripoff. It really, really is. You know, and my daughter's like, oh, I'm only paying $19.95 for unlimited texting, Dad. I'm like, how many texts do you do a day? Oh, I don't know. I do a lot. Well, how many? I don't know. And so this is the question I have for all of you. I don't do a lot of texting. I hate texting on that keypad. It drives me crazy. I have to look at it. And I sit there and scroll back and forth, make errors. It just drives me nuts. Why don't I hit send and call someone, talk to them for a minute instead of jamming my fingers on the keyboard? But some of you, I know you prefer to do your email and stuff that way. How many are you sending a month? How many text messages? So I want to hear from the gamut of you. I want to hear from the young folks, old folks, the whole nine yards. I want to see what the spread is. Geeknews@gmail.com. Send me that info, and I'll tally it all up, and we'll talk about it on the next show. All right, Windows Vista Service Pack 0.5 patch was leaked to the internet. You knew it wasn't going to be too long before that happened, but it looks to me here that Microsoft, woo! They have got, this is a list, my friends. This is a huge list of improvements that's going to be made to Vista. So if you want to see some of the things that's coming with the future service pack instead of the one that's partially ready to be released, take a look at this link in this article. It'll have all the details there. Now, cool and innovative products. I love cool and innovative products. Have you ever got to a hotel, and you've settled in for the night, and you said, I'm going to sleep in the morning. You call down the front desk, and you ask for, you know, like a 10 a.m. wake-up call. You've put out the do not disturb sign in front of the door in your room. You're all set. You go to bed, and about 8:30 in the morning, someone knocks on your door. And before you can even reply, you hear the door start to move because the maid's trying to come in to make up the room. Have you run into that? It's happened to me many, many, many times because I have stayed in a lot of hotels for many, many weeks on end. And there's this new invention now. It's called the retractable doorknob. This is a beautiful thing. That maid would not be able to turn that door handle to get in. This should be a requirement for every hotel in the entire world. Matter of fact, some parents may even want one of these type of doors for their room. Because, you know, kids are kids. You know, what do? They get up in the morning, and if your door is shut, they, you know, ratchet, ratchet, ratchet. And the next thing is they're in. And if your door doesn't have a lock, maybe you didn't want them to come in. But anyway, this is a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful invention. Whoever thought this up, it's very, very cool. It really, really is. Don't think it'll stop law enforcement from getting in your room because they'll still be able to kick the door in, but they definitely won't be able to turn the handle. All right, there's a good hack out there. Add up to 2 terabytes of storage to your Apple TV. They've been able to wake up the USB port. And there's some very simplified instructions to do this. I am totally psyched about this because that's a big problem with my Apple TV is it's all out of storage space. So I've got a big, fat hard drive in here and an external USB. It's going to go down and I'm going to attach it to it. Probably avoid my warranty. I don't care. I need more space. This is the cat's meow. It really, really is. So you can add up to 2 terabytes of external hard disk via the Apple TV hacked plug-in for the USB port. Really, really cool. Okay, I've got 2 or 3 articles I did find on the way in on this 700 megahertz spectrum. I'm going to put those all up in the show notes tonight because I think that's all important stuff for you all to follow. How many of you are playing around with Juiced at all? What would you do if Juiced were in a web app that you could run natively on anything that you're running, set up your own little Juiced service? Well, you get a chance to do that. There's a flash version of Juiced available online now, right now, that'll run on any browser. Hey, I want to make sure that if you get a chance to check out what we put out on the roundtable, I'll have a link to the roundtable that we did on Saturday. In the show notes, there is a downloadable iPod edition. I don't recommend it to really. It's best to get the full experience via the website. Full 1024 by 768. It's a flash presentation. You can get it either way, and the link will be up in the show notes on that. All right, over on ReadWriteWeb's great article in relation to a photo book service called Panoravan. And I played around with this a little bit today. This is a very, very cool service. So if you're looking to create photo books, check out panoravan.com. All right, those of you that buy a lot of domain names or playing around in the market, or if you have issues with the way things are being done right now within registers, this is your chance to shout out to the folks at Icon. On what's going on within the registry field, and they're looking for public commenting on this. And there's some transcripts and some stuff that went down during the latest meeting as well. So I think this is good that they're looking for public feedback on this. Now, in the bizarre story of the day, here's the headline. Are terrorists using Second Life to plan attacks? And this is pretty sensational. It's a pretty sensational article. And what some people have found on there is, you know, some things are pretty eye-opening. I don't think that this is anyone actually would be, I just can't imagine that they would be that dumb to do this. But who knows? A lot of comments on this particular article. And, you know, these guys live by the internet, so I guess it makes sense to, you know, go virtual. They probably think they're safe that way, where they're not going to be, over, you know, they're doing everything digitally. I don't know if the Second Life data stream is encrypted or not, but you know, a lot of people out there worried about all these different avenues that people are using. I guess they should be, but link will be up in the show notes. All right, interesting spin by the folks over at TechDirt. They're asking, why does the RIAA hate webcasters? And the reason they're saying this is apparently Live365 did a poll of all the webcasts on their service and found out that only 44% of the music on their webcast were from RIAA labels, which is pretty surprising. It really is. It says that many of the webcasters are playing a lot of indie music, and they're trying to figure out why the Sound Exchange, which is essentially an arm of the RIAA, has been so adamant about these rate increases. And they think part of it maybe is because they want to get paid regardless if these, because, you know, this is what these shows, they're going to have to pay regardless of what kind of music they're playing. So maybe they're trying to collect on something that they shouldn't have to collect on or shouldn't be collecting on in the first place. That's terrible. If you're playing 100% indie music, I didn't realize that you still had to pay the Sound Exchange their fees. Can someone validate that for me? This is on Tech Dirt, so I can only think that this is pretty valid. But if you're playing a complete indie stream, I can't imagine why the RIAA and Sound Exchange would want their cut. They shouldn't be allowed to. All right, some interesting news out of Symantec. They're reporting that they're working on a project called Dark Vision. It's an application that's used to visualize and track the underground economy that trades personal data such as credit cards and social security numbers. And what they're essentially doing is they're looking into their clubhouse, says Mark Bergman, CTO. And he says it's the safe spot where they exchange illegally gotten information. And this tool is being developed kind of slowly. But they're getting to these sites where they don't hang out too long. These folks are very, very skittish. They move around on a daily basis to different servers to do this stuff. But I guess this is not a product that's coming. It's a research product. But I'd love to see some of the mass data that they're getting and kind of look at that. And they're doing this in sort of a cloud type level where you can actually see the traffic going on and the difference between the different nodes and this illegal underground commerce. Very, very interesting. I'd love to look at that. I'm sure many of you would as well. Hey, those of you that have signed up recently for Verizon Fios, beware the first bill. There's a article in here by Larry Dingen, who had received the service, and he'd actually gotten a bill that had some excess charges on it. So if you are getting the Verizon Fios service, take a very close look at your very first bill that you get from them. It's going to be a doozy. His was a little over $300, but I guess there was some extra charges on there that he had removed that because they didn't actually do the service that they charged him for. But there's some default things that get billed that you need to look out for. All right, I think I'm about done here with commentary tonight. I got one last article to talk about. NASA is about to launch a new scientific mission to Mars. It's actually a laboratory, and it's going to be the first spacecraft to land in the northern polar region of the planet and dig for evidence or water or other conditions that could support some form of life on Mars. It's called the Mars Phoenix Lander. Now, while this one's not going to come in and land on a beanbag and roll around, this one's actually going to be coming in hot and heavy. It's going to have a parachute system that's going to slow us down, and then retro rockets that will actually get this thing on the deck. They've had not a lot of good luck. They have not had a lot of good luck doing this, with a more than 50% failure rate of probes that have been sent to Mars landing this way. It's a tough gig. It really, really is. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. And I guess this is supposed to be launched on a Delta II rocket during a 3-week window that opens this coming Friday. So let's hope that they get another device on Mars, and then we collect a lot more great science. This thing's going to have a weather station on it. It's going to have a full-blown laboratory. It's got a little mini backhoe that can reach out and touch something and dig a hole up to 20 inches deep. So this is going to be really cool. It really, really is. So We'll keep you abreast of this, of course, as the time goes on. But let me go ahead tonight. I'm going to do this in reverse order. I'm going to actually go into the show comments first on email, and then we'll play the voicemail at the end. As always, you can send your comments to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. And, of course, the voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. Got an email from Roberto. He said, "Hey, Todd, this is one geek with kids to be geeks." And we talked about this before, but he talks about the Scratch application that was released by MIT. I'll have this again up in the show notes tonight. But again, if you have kids that are you think would be make good programmers, they've got a good programming language and environment meant to get kids turned on to programming and making some of their own games. I did get a video comment from Alan. Let me go ahead and move this over into the voicemail comments because I'm going to have to queue this up. I don't know how this is actually going to play. We'll see. We'll play this here at the when I get down through the email. Got an email from DT. He said, "Hey, Todd, I'm listening to episode 287. As I write this, I was watching TV in the background while I was on my new MacBook Pro, which I love so far, and heard it cost around 170K pounds for a house here in Hawaii. I know you were saying it was expensive in Honolulu, but my goodness, that is equivalent to a small three-bedroom house in the UK in a good area. I said, I'm still a student. I'm looking forward to buying my first home. I really do think I should start saving, and I know my girlfriend has. I wish you luck on getting your new house and keep us posted because I think it gives us it's a nice personal touch when you talk about your family life." Hey, you know what, Danny? It's you know, I pre-qualified for a just absolutely insane amount of money. You know, I told the loan officer, I actually asked him, I said, "Are you crazy?" I said, "You know, this is the amount you pre-qualified me for. Do you realize that that would be like a $5,000 a month house payment?" I said, "You know, are you nuts? You know, I got to eat. My kids need clothes and shoes. Well, we could wear flip-flops here in Honolulu." And my wife and I set a budget. And as crazy as it may sound, you know, essentially what I'm looking at is between $500,000 and $550,000 here to get in a house that is in an area that has still a good school, and yet the house won't really need to be fixed up. I went into some dumps in the Kailua, Kaneohe area, which is on the windward side, that were $650,000 plus, that if I'd have took a can of gasoline in and poured it on the floor and burnt this piece of crap to the ground, the land would have been worth, it would have been worth more without the building there. It is shocking. It is simply shocking, some of the stuff that's for sale here. People have, it's absolute pure greed. Now, I guess if I was in their position, I'd probably be one of those pure greed people too, but things are overpriced, just absolutely ridiculous here. It's nuts. It really, really is. And we'll keep you advised. And still, that amount of money just scares me. It really, really does. It does. I got an email from Rod, and hey, Rod, the article you're referring to here, I actually wrote a term paper on this subject. He says, "Todd, I know you really like mobile technology. I'm sure that you have had the same power availability issues that I have had. I've been watching the development of a portable fuel cell from a company called Metis Technologies for quite some time. I received two of the devices and I'm currently testing them. So far, I've charged two iPod Nanos from zero to full charge about 2 hours and an iPod Mini from zero to full charge twice, about 2 hours each time. I'm still using the first 24/7 power pack." It says the company is still ramping up its production here, and there are still some growth pain issues. For example, their collection of charging connections for various devices is still pretty limited, but there are tips for iPods, about 20 different cell phones, Treos, and a few other handheld computers. The company has recently opened a fully automated production line in Ireland, capable of producing 1.5 million units per month per line. Their fuel manufacturing plant is capable of supplying 3 lines, and their packaging operation can provide service for 2 lines. And he links me to a real cool video. I'll put that up there. And you know, Rod, I have got one of these devices too. I got it as a demo unit. Do I have it stacked? I thought I had it over here on a desk. Let me look. Probably my little one has run off. Oh, there it is. It's back there. Let me grab it. Hang on. The one I have that was sent to me is the iGo, and it runs off of two AA's. And this thing was pretty amazing. It recharged my iPod, and which, you know, just some disposable or even rechargeable AA's you could use in this if you want to be more environmentally friendly. But these little power packs are just completely incredible. And for the traveler, they work out real well. Now, what I had done a term paper on, and I think it was like 23 pages or something like that, was on power cells for the home and people running alternative fuels and being able to have battery technology and so forth that from solar panels. And while we're able to recharge our mobile devices now, I don't think it's going to be, it's going to be a short time before we're all going to be looking at our homes having some sort of, alternative power in it. And but thanks for that link to that particular video. I'll have that up in the show notes for everyone. Great, great commentary. Got an email back from Susabel, and she says, "You wonder why I don't electronically download music, but instead hold out for CDs. Here's my explanation. I use iTunes and my iPod for most of my music. I find it extremely inconvenient to try to figure out how to put the music I've downloaded from there onto a CD that I can then play on any stereo with a CD device. If I use another form of download, it's almost always an MP3. MP3 plays okay in my car stereo, but not all on the very nice and expensive home stereo I have. So I'm stuck with an MP3 music even if I burned it onto a CD. Only in my car or my laptop or converted onto my iPod. And like it or not, MP3s are not the high quality end product that a CD is. MP3 played through my iPod, even when hooked up to nice home stereo, loses a lot of the nuances I would have if I were listening to them compressed CD. Sometimes I end up not liking the music I get either downloaded or on CD if I bought it as a download. Too bad I'm out of the money. But if is a CD, I have the option of selling it either to the CD exchange store here in town or on half.com, where I sell several $100 worth of books and CDs every month. It says Derek Miller's music, when downloaded through iTunes, is DRM'd. He offers the option of downloading MP3s without DRM, but look at number 2 and you'll see why I don't like this option. So that's my explanation why I don't buy music downloads and they don't fit my needs. Yep, understand that completely. I'm sure we'll have some commentary back for you from the listeners on the show. Maybe they have some ideas for you as well. Got an email from Billy. Says, "Hey, Todd, Linux has been bootable off a USB drive for a long time. You can even get versions that will fit on a 64 megabyte key. It is nice to see Windows catching up with open source world." Well, I don't think they're purposely catching up. I think someone just hacked together a hack that allows it to boot. And next email is, "Hey, Todd, you mentioned today's show that you'd love to have a waterproof USB flash drive. I knew someone was going to tell me this." He says, "I have a 1 gig and a 2 gig Corsair Voyager USB drive. They have both been through the wash and still work great. My boss even got his 1 gigabyte Corsair Voyager run over in the parking lot. You know, I've done that myself. I run some USB sticks through the laundry before as well, but they don't fare too well in the dryer." That's where they're usually get whacked. All right, let's get the audio comments out of the way, and let me add this video clip, and let me put that in here. Let's play the first voicemail first, and I haven't previewed these, so this will be as much a surprise to you as it is to me.
Hi, Todd. This is Tom from the Fog View podcast.
Hey, Tom.
And I want to make a comment about something that you mentioned a few shows ago, which I hadn't heard any response from. And that's on looking for an externally powered USB cable. And you wanted to be able to take a USB cable and power some devices using external power instead of using the power in the computer. And you mentioned about maybe going out and taking a USB cable and breaking the power lines and then adding your own power to it. I would advise against that. Having designed a number of interface circuits in the past and knowing that if you externally power something that has interface signals on it and you don't have it plugged in, which means those signals are not being activated, you could do some damage and get up what they call a latch-up condition inside of the device and or the device, it wasn't really designed to do that. What I would suggest as an alternative is getting a externally powered USB hub. Now, a USB hub would have a power wart on it. In fact, I have a Belkin USB hub here. It has five USB ports. It has a 2.6 amp, 5 volt wall wart, which means it can provide 0.5 amps at 5 volts to each of the devices plugged into the hub. So I would suggest that as an alternative, since it's probably designed to be used in different situations, especially if the hub is plugged into a computer and the computer is turned off, which means the interface signals would not be driven, but it would still have power on the device. So that would be my solution for that. Something else that I had heard you mention a number of times, and I'm going to give you a bad time about this, but you had mentioned when you refer to people in the United States or as the lower 48. And I don't know if you were ever stationed in Alaska or what, but it just seems kind of an odd thing to hear from somebody in Hawaii referring to us over here as the lower 48. Anyway, keep up the good work. Talk to you later. Bye.
First of all, on the lower 48 call, you know, it's kind of funny because normally what we say is back in the mainland from here in Hawaii, the folks back in the mainland. And the reason I say the lower 48 is because, in all honesty, Alaska is not in the lower. Alaska is quite a bit north. So that's kind of how I refer to that. You know, I guess because Alaska and Hawaii are essentially detached by a number of miles from the lower 48. That's kind of how I reference that. So no insult intended here. Alaska and Hawaii are the same in many ways because we're essentially detached from the rest of the country. But good audio comment nonetheless. And it's, I don't know, I've heard a couple of people say that before, and it's probably not the best way to refer to it. So I'll refer back to the mainland. But people that are in the mainland are like, what do you mean mainland? What are you saying the mainland? Okay, so far as the externally powered USB hub, I think probably this is the way I'm going to go, but this is going to go in a backpack. I'll have to have a DC source. So all I have to do is the USB hub that I get is going to have to be able to be powered by a DC battery source that I'm going to be able to have at least enough current draw to be able to run it for an extended period. So, you know, that is relatively easy to put together, and it's something that I'm highly capable of doing, and especially if I need to get my soldering iron out, and depending on what type of a battery combination I come up with, I'll step down either through a transformer, not through a transformer, but I'll make sure that I get the right levels into the external hub. That's why I'm just trying to make my battery life on my laptop last a lot longer when I'm driving a camera and the USB EVDO card from Sprint, because those things just suck up a lot of juice. They really, really do. Okay, this is a audio / video comment that came in, and I'll go ahead and play this. Hopefully this cues up the same way as the audio does.
Hi Todd, it's Alan Scahill from Medicine Hat Alberta calling, a long-time listener. One comment and one question. On your last show, you mentioned an email from Susabel, actually a voicemail from Susabel, and she was talking about her Word documents and being on a USB stick and only being able to read them if she had access to Word. If she was to put Abbey Word Portable on that stick, she'd be able to read them and do some editing also. I have it on my USB dongle along with a bunch of other portable applications, and I find that stick very useful for various items that I do with it. Anyway, on a comment for yourself, some time ago you'd done a survey to your podcast listeners, and I'm not too sure if I'd missed the show, but I never did hear any results from that, and you said at one time, I think, that you were going to speak about some listener suggestions. Anyway, I'd like to hear it if you get a chance. The other thing is, to all the podcasters out there that are listening to your show, or the ones that are nominated especially, good luck to them all, and Enjoy your show. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hey, Billy, thanks for that. Appreciate that. Nice touch on the video comment. So far as the survey goes, you're right. You know what I need to do? I need to just go over to SurveyMonkey and do an export on that data and get that published up on the website someplace so that you all can tap into that. Let me work on that. I'm actually, while you were speaking, I actually made myself a tasker within Outlook. Let me get that knocked out. I need to start feeding that data back to you folks as well. So thanks for the reminder on that. And thanks for the comments to Susabel as well. All right, folks, I'm going to wrap up for tonight. Hey, thanks for staying subscribed, being part of the family. Share the show information with folks you know. And always send your comments in, positive or negative, to geeknews@gmail.com. I'm fast approaching midnight here, so I need to get busy and get this show up for you. Some of you are probably on the East Coast are probably wondering where it's at already. But until next time, take care, and we'll see you on Friday. Aloha.